This is an ABC podcast.
It's time to get out and about in the garden with Rowanna and Sabrina here on ABC Radio Perth and WA.
Indeed it is. It's time for Roots and Shoots, but not with Rowanna. It's me, Alex Hyman, here with you on Roots and Shoots today across ABC Perth and WA. Rowanna is off today. I'm stepping into the hot seat, and it's been a long time since I've been on Saturday breakfast and Roots and Shoots on this program, and it is wonderful to be able to say g'day to Sabrina Hahn. Sabrina, hello.
Hello, Alex. How are you? I am so well. I'm back in my old stomping ground up here in Cal, where it's all happening. There's been earthquakes. There's bloody pelicans have arrived in town for some unknown reason, which is a bit of a bizarre sight in the middle of
Is that a telltale desert? Sign of an earthquake, perhaps? Is that what... forebodes an earthquake?
I don't know. It's strange, isn't it? So the town is a bit agog at seeing pelicans.
Yeah. Is everyone okay there? Have you been out and about to see how people are responding? Or what's actually happened?
Well, no, because I didn't land until, 8 o'clock this morning. So
right.
I haven't had much time to. But I'm here the whole weekend. So I'm going to do a little cruise around and talk to the locals and see what's happening in people's gardens.
Yeah, and hopefully everything's okay with the earthquake. Was it just from what you're hearing?
Yeah, it's a 3. It wasn't major.
Yeah, Leslie texted in. She said, there was an earthquake in Kalgoorlie this morning. I think Sabrina has landed.
Well, I love that. Yeah. That is great.
So there you go. Now, we were chatting for the Perth audience. We were chatting about those suburbs that you live in, or those suburbs that perhaps sit in the shadow of another suburb, and you're in the goldfields there. And Chris Parry, who we were chatting to, was talking about how perhaps Boulder sits in the shadow of Kalgoorlie more broadly a little bit.
Yeah.
So you're going to give the Boulder people some love?
A big hello. Well, do you know Boulder, it's years ago that I lived here, but Boulder had the biggest collection of the most wonderful characters. So whenever you came across anyone that was extraordinary in one way or another, they always came from Boulder.
Right. Well, so, Brad McCann, producer of the Breakfast program here, is case in point. There you go.
Yes, exactly, exactly. I love the goldfields. It's, I know that Kalgoorlie is a lot more FIFO now, but there's some amazing people live in the goldfields, and you have to be pretty resilient up here, I reckon, because you get, you certainly do if you're a plant. For a start.
Is it challenging gardening conditions in the goldfields?
I remember trying to dig a hole with a spade when I first arrived, and I think that was the only time it ever came out of the shed.
You were fossicking.
Fossicking for something that you could dig a hole and put a plant in.
Right.
So I got rid of the spade altogether, bought myself a crowbar and a pick. And that was really the only way that you could dig a hole to put something in. So there are some challenges here. 45 degree heat and then -5 in winter.
Yeah.
So can be a little bit tough. So you have to, but mind you, the goldfields all up around here have the most astonishing flora, native flora.
So. And at the right time of year, I'd imagine the wildflowers would be spectacular.
Oh, sensational. So I'm going to be encouraging people to keep up the good fight and keep their gardens and plant more shade, put more trees in. So I'm having a chat at at Little Lodes Garden Centre at 10:30 for anyone that's in town. Come and say hello, bring out your dead, dying and unidentified, and I'll give it a fair old crack, see what I can do for you.
Now, we've got a text message come through. Is Kalgoorlie soil good? Would it be worth getting one of my mates to bring a trailer load down?
Oh, yeah. The Kalgoorlie soil's lovely and it's quite mineralised. Certainly has some elements of gold in it and nickel and all sorts of other things.
It could be fantastic soil.
I tell you what. I would love to have a truckload of goldfield soil to mix in with my gutless coastal sand. It would be the perfect mix.
So what are you doing in the garden now, Sab, as we get to late November? What are the things you are doing to prepare for the inevitable heat that is
summer.
coming our way?
Yeah. I've certainly topped up my mulch. So I've made sure the mulch is 5 centimetres thick because summer's going to hit us with a shock, I reckon. So it's just going to go whoomper. So anything that you can do to retain moisture in the ground is so important, so important. Check every single dripper or sprayer in your reticulation system, because if it's blocked or if it's facing the wrong way or the water's not getting through, midsummer, if you go for 2 watering cycles and the water isn't getting to particular plants, in 40 degree heat they're going to die. So it's really important to make sure that your retic system is efficient as possible.
So doing those things now that can help it survive through what is coming, no doubt.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into it, shall we? The numbers, if you want to get in touch, 1300 222 720, or you can text through 0437 922 720. Phil is in Dawesville. Good morning, Phil.
Hello, how are you, Sabrina?
Yeah, I'm really good, Phil.
Hey, about a month ago, you probably wouldn't remember, but I rang you and asked you about germinating lemon seed.
Oh, yes, I do remember.
Right. Well, I put 6 seeds into a little black 6-section plant, seedling plant.
Yeah.
And now I have 6 little trees.
Oh, Phil, you are a legend.
So a couple of things there. What I did is I put the little seed plant into a dog bowl and I just had a splash of water in the bottom of the dog bowl so it kept everything moist without being too wet. That worked pretty good. Now, what I'm wondering is these seeds came from a dwarf lemon tree, lots of lemons, I think it's called.
Yeah.
When these grow, are they going to be the same or will they be something different?
No, they won't be the same. So the lots of lemons, the reason it's a short one is it's actually grown from a cutting. So your seed, now, lots of lemons is I'm pretty sure it's a Meyer lemon. So yours will be a normal size lemon. It's not going to be a dwarf one, but it's probably, it's either going to be a Myra or a Eureka lemon. Nevertheless, Phil, it's exciting. Grow them.
I don't know what I'm going to do with 6 lemons, but we'll work it out as we get to it.
Well, Christmas is coming up, mate.
When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Is that not the saying?
Oh, that's it.
At what stage do I take them out of the little black punnet and put them into bigger pots?
Okay, so they would need to be 10 centimetres high.
No worries.
And then pop them up into a 13-centimetre pot.
Good stuff. Success, eh?
There we go.
Well done, Phil.
I like starting with a success story. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
We've got a text from Luna of Waroona. She said, says, good morning, Sabrina. I have families of crusader bugs with the cream of St. George's cross on their backs.
Enjoying
my dwarf lime tree every afternoon. The tree is not so dwarf anymore with loads of fruit coming on this year. The online info was that the baby bugs go for new shoots, but can you reassure me that they won't affect the fruit? Thank you, Luna, for that.
Hi, Luna. No, they won't affect the fruit, but what will happen is the new growth will actually dry it because they suck the sap out of the new fresh leaves, and they breed up pretty quickly. Now, crusader bugs will go to many different plants, so I would start controlling them if I were you. You can have just a bucket of soapy water, put a pair of gloves on, in a bowl or a bucket, shake the branches where you see all the crusader bugs and they'll drop into a bucket and die. You can hand pick them off. The nymphs or the young crusader bugs, they don't develop the cross on the back. But they do as much damage, but they won't affect the fruit.
Okay, there you go. That hopefully that information is good for you, Luna. Let's head to Byford. Eileen is there. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Eileen.
Hello. I've got quite a large Feijoa in a pot.
Yeah.
And it's had lots of flowers this year.
Yeah.
And now it's producing fruit. I wanted to give it a bit of a treat, but I didn't want it give it a shock and drop all its fruit.
Yeah.
Is it okay to fertilise it?
I would only liquid fertilise it. How big's the pot?
Oh, it's very big, really big.
Very big.
Pot.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you could liquid fertilise it. I'd be very careful about granular fertilising it at this point, and particularly I think it's going to be 34 next week. I would just give it liquid fertiliser once every 2 or 3 weeks at this stage.
Right. And what about your beautiful magic mix that we use?
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yep, that's you can use that any time.
Yep, lovely. Yep. Beautiful, thank you.
Okay, no worries.
Thank you, Eileen. That was Eileen in Byford. Let's head to Gidgiganup. Richard is there, and he has a question about a liquid amber tree. Morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Morning, Richard.
Hey, Sabrina, we have planted a lot of deciduous trees and a lot of quite a few of liquid ambers, but one particular liquid amber doesn't seem to grow. It drops its leaves and changes leaves during the season, but does not grow in height. And I've transplanted probably about 3 years ago, thinking there might be something wrong in the soil, and probably didn't put enough good stuff in the soil, but still the same. It seems to be as a stunt growth.
It's a dud. Now, what happens if you get trees that just do not grow, and you've already transplanted it, so you've done what I would have suggested, dig it up, move it, put it somewhere else. Now, sometimes what happens with trees is if the root system is compromised in any way, you will never get decent growth out of it.
Oh, okay.
So you either put up with a sort of a stunted dwarf liquid amber, or you rip it out and put a new one in.
Okay, then. Rightio.
Sorry, Richard.
Okay.
Wrong answer.
You've got to be the bearer of bad news occasionally, Sav, don't you?
I know.
Hey, shall we blast through some text messages here, get a few done? The numbers, if you'd like to get in touch with Sabrina Hahn, 1-300-222-720. If you'd like to call through and go on the air and ask her a question, and the text line is 0437-922-720. William has done just that. Can you take hardwood cuttings from a kwandong bush?
Ooh, now that's a really good question. I don't know. I've never tried to grow them from a cutting. I do believe they're quite tricky. So this is how you're going to do it. You will need the tip cutting, so the new growth in summer. So you're seeing all the new growth now. The most kwandongs, I think, have got all their fruit on now. So you want the new growth. Now, you don't want that cutting to be more than 5 to 6 centimetres long. You will have to use a hormone gel. So you need to get a hormone gel for soft wood cutting. So you're going to dip it in the gel, and then you're going to grow it in a mixture of seed raising mix and perlite 50-50 mix. Perlite and seed raising mix. You need a little cloche over the top of it. So if you put it in a little pot, you'll need to make sure that you keep the moisture in the leaf tissue. So people just use a soft drink bottle, cut the bottom out and put that in over the pot.
Right. There you go, William. Hopefully that proves effective. Let us know down the track how you go with that. Sabrina, would a 50-50 mixture of water and metho kill tree viruses when the bark splits?
No. I doubt that very, very much. You could certainly try it. You're better off using copper, getting a copper paste and pasting that on, because viruses, they don't like copper. They won't grow in plant material anyway. Some people use for viruses, Alex.
Right.
Some people use that really, really fine copper wire and they pierce, like they put a hole through the trunk of the plant, push the copper wire through the hole and then wrap it around the trunk.
I've heard, right, okay.
Yeah.
And what's the property of the copper that the what's it doing?
That virus doesn't like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know scientifically why that, but people swear by it. Like tomato growers do it all the time.
Is there any truth to the idea? I remember hearing from somebody in regards to, and I know they're not your favourite, the lemon tree thing.
Mm-hmm.
A copper nail into a lemon tree would help it bear fruit, or is that just...
Well, I've never seen copper nails.
Yeah, somebody
said,
I think this is an old, I don't know, I would have thought they would have been too soft. But
yeah,
apparently
I was gonna say,
this was
how
a
do
thing.
You...
I don't know.
Maybe this is
what an old
hole.
Bloke told me. That,
well, yeah, that's where that would come from. So we do know that plant viruses, they react differently if there's copper on the near the cambium layer. So... Oh, it's worth a try. The methane water isn't going to do anything.
Right.
So you're better off trying
copper. So we can count that
copper.
One out. Yeah,
yeah,
no worries.
Yeah.
Roll-on lawn going on. Yellow sand. How do I need to prepare the sand? What's the best variety of roll-on to use?
Okay, so it depends where you are, how much sun. There's lots of lawn... turf farms in Western Australia, they give you really fantastic lawn information on what is the best lawn for you. Doesn't matter what you're going to use, you must improve that sandy soil. Lawn actually likes sand, but you have to mix compost in with it. It's got to be mature compost and very fine compost. Or you can get lawn loam, which has the gingin loam in it, and that's magic. So you mix in that with a bit of compost. You've got to use a wetting agent, and I would definitely use a lawn fertilizer and some soil microbes. And then depending how much, whether you've got clay underneath or sand, it's coastal or you're up in the hills, whether how much sun it's got, how much traffic you will have on that lawn, you need to, look at all the different types and make a decision according on to where you are.
There you go. And that's an interesting segue there, Sab, because my lawn, we recently got this monkey bar arrangement for the kids out the front and my lawn's taken a beating. Is there anything you can do in regards to high traffic areas where, like, the swing area, the little square meter where the swing is, we're digging a trench and my lawn is not looking very good at all. Can I make the lawn more robust in any way or resilient to traffic? What do you do?
Yeah, so do you know what sort of lawn you've got, Alex?
It's buffalo.
Green.
It's towards
a buffalo.
Buffalo.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what you can do, so that area where the kids jump all the time will have compaction. Where you've got compaction, then the root system gets compounded and you have all sorts of problems. So what you need to do at the end of every week, get a garden fork and you're going to spear that area of the lawn, you're going to spear it and wiggle the fork around so that you get better aeration in that part. And the only other thing you can do is every couple of months you dig that patch up and put a new square of lawn in.
Yeah, that's the approach I've been taking. When in doubt, just replace. Yeah, that's right. So there we go. All the copper aficionados are texting in now, Sab. Copper kills.
Are they?
Copper kills bacteria to about 95% within a few hours.
Ooh.
Robin in Kelmscott says copper nails are used in timber boat building.
Of course.
A few people coming through with that. Copper and brass have natural antibacterial properties.
Yes.
Glenn has texted in, I always thought a copper nail into a tree would kill it. Like if you ever wanted to secretly get rid of it. Well, we won't.
No gorilla
tree antics. All right, let's chat to Mary. Mary's in Maylands this morning and she wants to transfer a tree. Good morning, Mary.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Very well. How are you going there in Maylands? You've got a hibiscus that you're wanting to move.
Yeah, so we've got three of the large purpley green native hibiscus, the sea hibiscus. Is that correct?
Is it the one that has a yellow flower?
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. Not actually native, but everyone thinks it is, so that's fine.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Anyway, we've got three of them, and the house is going to be renovated.
Yep.
It's actually in my daughter's garden, which is in Darnella. And we're wanting to see if we can save them and put them in very large, like a large garden bed.
Yeah.
At another location.
Yep.
How hard are they to dig up?
They have a very extensive root system, Mary.
Yes.
So you'll need a reciprocating saw to cut off some of the roots.
Oh, excellent.
but they transplant really well. So,
oh, do they? Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you won't have a problem there. You just need a little bit of muscle.
Okay.
How tall are they?
They're already probably about 2.5 metres. I think they're fully grown.
Oh, yeah, that's – oh, no, they're not.
No, they're not. Okay.
Oh, 2.5 metres is nowhere near fully grown.
Oh, okay.
They'll get to about 4 to 5, 6 metres high and about 4 metres wide. So, yeah, they're small enough to dig up.
Okay, brilliant.
Yep.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay, no worries, Mary.
Thank you, Mary. Let's head to Collie now. Neville's in Collie. Morning, Neville.
G'day, how you going?
We are good. You have a stunted mulberry tree.
Yeah, it's an old English mulberry. Cost me a lot of money, but over the last 2 or 3 years, it just hasn't grown. This year, finally, I've got some fruit on it.
Yeah.
But the leaves have got a lot of spots on them, a lot of black spots.
Yeah, they get a bacterial spot here in Perth. Now, and they are notoriously slow growing, Neville. So mine, I have one. Mine didn't do anything for 3 years, so I leant the axe against it. and then I dug it up and moved it to another spot that it actually loved, and it's finally taken off. But because that mulberry tree, they'll live for a couple of hundred years. They're really slow growing. So don't give up on it, Neville. You'll find year 4 and 5, they really start, you know, to cut the mustard. But, so they do require, because they go into that winter dormancy and they're dormant for quite a long time, you really need to pump the fertilizer on in spring and summer.
Yep.
So they're quite heavy feeders.
Yep. So what are you saying? Like natural stuff or what type of stuff to feed it for fertilizer?
I'd feed it fertilizer that's good for fruit trees.
Yep.
Righto. I can't give you a product name, Neville.
How would it get rid of that spot on the leaf? Cause it doesn't
look
that good,
okay. So you can just spray that with Mancozeb.
Okay, Mancozeb. Yeah, righto.
Yeah. Mine get it every year. I never bother. Doesn't seem to affect the fruit or anything. But, Mancozeb. Well, the really important time to spray it with a copper spray, Neville, is when it's dormant in June and July. You do a liquid copper spray.
Right.
So then you won't get the problem at all emerging in spring and summer.
Okay. So when it's in dormancy, copper spray, June, July.
Yep.
And Mancozeb
now that it's got its leaves,
And just feed it up and keep watering, I suppose.
Yep.
There you go, Neville.
Only a young fella, Neville. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You'll get your fruit.
Hi, Sab and Alex. Planted, this is an email now, Sab.
Yes.
Three rad... I'm going to start. Radamachira about 18 months ago. Then the lower older leaves on one of them started to lose colour and die back from the tip to stem in later spring. The top leaf struggled on and some new stunted shoots are emerging now. The other two seem to be also affected. Then early last summer, I planted 4 viburnums. Nearby, and the lower leaves on all 4 are yellowing and dropping. They were all planted in the right mix of potting mix, manure, slow-release fertiliser and bentonite. Would appreciate your opinion on what is going on here. That's from Ray and Pam in Darlington. They've emailed through.
Okay, so they're in Darlington and And now, a lot of the, so you wouldn't need the bentonite because you've already got clay in Darlington. The cold weather, the cold mornings really knock Radamachira around because they're a tropical plant. So that yellowing that I can see on the leaf, because she's thankfully sent through pictures on the email. So that's classic of a cold, wet winter and cold spring, because we haven't, you know, spring just went, was like winter that went on and on. Yeah, and the viburnum definitely has had spider mite. So you can just use a sulfur spray for that. The Radamachira should start picking up. They've got both the viburnum and the Radamachira have a trace element deficiency. So you need to get a foliar trace spray to spray on the leaves, and you need to do it every fortnight until you start seeing the leaves go green.
There we go. So if you'd like to do the same and email your question through, you can do so on perthweekends@your.abc.net.au. That's perthweekends@your.abc.net.au. Now, Sab, we are at that time of the week where you get to pick a song. So,
yeah.
And you've gone with the WA band this time.
Yep.
Can you talk
yep.
us through your choice?
Yeah, a little bit of Spacey Jane. I reckon they're a funky little group. Like to support local artists. So I chose this song because I haven't cleaned my car for about, I don't know, 6 months. It's disgusting. I was thinking I wouldn't even put the dog in this car at this point in time. So this is Spacey Jane. It's called Clean My Car.
It's a few people will be doing that today, I'd imagine. So it's perfect day for it. Perfect day for it. Here it is. Haven't they had a big year? That's Spacey Jane and Clean My Car. Obviously doing very well with their tours and what have you here in Perth. They're obviously a Perth band, but it's not often that some local heroes get to play at a venue like the Perth Arena and in front of an adoring crowd. So there you go, Sab. That is your pick for today. A great track.
Thank you. Thank you. And we hope that Sam from Gero likes that one. He hasn't liked the last couple of picks, I have to say. And he's my sounding board, really, Alex.
Well, an anonymous texter said, love the song, Sab. Well done, anonymous texter. If you are texting in on 0437 922 720, do please put your name so we know who we are talking to, and Sabrina knows whose questions she is answering. Shall we head to Kensington? We'll get a few more calls in ahead of chatting to some special guests who are going to be in the studio with me shortly, who you've brought in. Looking forward to finding out more about that. But let's head to Kensington. Rebecca is there. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
G'day, Rebecca. How are you?
What can we do for you?
Okay, well, I'm sitting outside the dentist while my son gets his wisdom tooth taken out.
Oh, ooh.
And, I know, but look, I've got a worse problem.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Okay.
Moving right along now.
All right. I live in a really old house, the gardens that you and I adore.
Yeah.
So I can't grow any fruit trees. So they're all in large 100-litre pots, and I'm talking yeah. about 11.
Yes.
Couldn't work out why two of the trees were living. And I dug them up, and I've got fantastic ugly sandgropers. It's their eggs. I've done 200 litres picking out red eggs. I don't want to use imidacloprid.
No.
Is there anything else I can do to get... Because they lay 200 a pop.
Are you sure they're sandgropers?
Yes, I picked it up. It looks like a witchetty grub with an armoured helmet on it. Definitely
sounds like a sandgroper. Do you know, Rebecca, sandgropers are just about extinct in urban areas now, so you should sell them.
I threw it over on the roof for the bird.
Good woman. Okay, now, there is a neem oil drench that you can get, and there's another product that is organic. It's called, I can't give you the product name, but it will mention grub on the label.
Okay.
And it will mention that it's a eco type of a product.
All right.
Ooh. So you can do either of those. I wish if I was in town, I'd come and pick up the eggs of the sand gropers because they're becoming very rare.
Are they an important part of the ecosystem, Sab?
They burrow, they dig those little tracks through through the soil, and lots of things eat sand gropers. You would have noticed that if you've thrown them out, the birds will be onto them.
Sabrina?
Yes.
Right. I offered these eggs on Buy Nothing because I know kids would love it.
Yeah.
They didn't take any, unfortunately.
Oh.
I'm happy to save you some in soil. You're welcome to them.
Yeah, that'd be great. So if you stay on the line, Rebecca, we'll get Ebs to take
your
details contact
there,
details. Yeah,
sounds good. Thank you, Rebecca. Rebecca there in Kensington with some important eggs there for you, Sab.
I know.
Yeah. You are on Roots and Shoots. It's Alex Hyman here with you, and Sabrina Hahn is obviously here as well. She is in Kalgoorlie, in fact, coming to us from the Goldfields today. I'm in for Roanna Edwards. And we are coming up to 21 minutes to 10. Now we will get to you, Dennis, shortly, but I have two very lovely people in front of me here, Sab. I have Deborah Bowie and Anthony Santoro, who have come in especially for Roots and Shoots today.
They have.
Yeah. Why are we speaking to Deborah and Anthony today?
Well, there's this really interesting project that Anthony's been heading up, and it's all to do with the snake-necked turtle, which we actually don't know much about. So Anthony and Deborah are involved in this project to track where the turtles are during their breeding cycle and to get all of us involved in looking for our snake-necked turtles. And I'll let Anthony talk more about that.
Welcome to the studio, Anthony and Deborah. Great to have you in today. You've just finished your PhD, Anthony, is that correct?
Yeah. So I just submitted it a couple months ago and just yesterday finished the suggested edits on it, but yeah. Just done.
So tell us about the snake-necked turtle. Where do we find this critter?
So the snake-necked turtle is endemic to the southwest of Australia. So that means it's only here in the whole world. Occurs from about Durian Bay up in the north, down and south to Fitzgerald River, which is between Albany and Esperance. In that range, it's kind of natural, modified and completely artificial wetlands, so that's like lakes, swamps, rivers, creeks, kind of anywhere there's fresh water, really.
Yeah, and how is the snake-necked turtle travelling? Is it got a few challenges, I understand?
Yeah, so it's still here at the moment. We've kind of caught this at a pretty opportune moment where most of the populations do still have male and female adults, but the numbers are declining and those populations are missing juveniles from what my trapping data suggests. So the reason that is kind of quite a few threats, ranges from kind of climate change to habitat modification and predation. So the climate change is like drying out our lakes and stuff, so there's not enough habitat for them. It's affecting their like nesting movements and the incubation of the eggs, and then the urbanization where, again, infilling lakes, putting roads all around them, and that's so the females, when they come out to nest, they get crushed. We've also removed a lot of the habitat where they nest in. And then predators like foxes, and then just lots of birds, but a big one is the raven, which its populations have expanded, and so they just predate on the turtles and the nest as well.
Now, as part of your PhD, you set up a citizen science project, and that's where you come into this, Deborah. What's your involvement in this?
I'm a volunteer, I'm a participant, I'm a turtle tracker and nest protector.
Okay, and what's involved in turtle tracking?
So we sign up as a volunteer and we get training. So Anthony comes out and gives us training. We get frocked up with a little jacket and we've got a kit and we take a shift. So once a week or a couple of times a week, we go out and we have a designated area that we walk around and looking for turtles.
Fantastic.
Once we find a turtle, we might follow that turtle and we stay some distance away. We wait for it to do its nesting and then we go in and protect that nest with some mesh and cover it so it's not easy for predators to come along and dig up the nest.
So just on that, Deborah, how hard is it to actually find the nests in the first place?
If you were just looking for the nest, I think it'd be really difficult. But the turtles are on the move, and so what we do is that we just follow them at a distance, and once they're out of the water, that's what they're looking for mostly, is a nesting spot. So we follow them and watch them through that process. Just a couple of weeks ago, I followed a turtle that had just come out of the bush near a wetland, followed it. Within about 20 minutes, it had found its nesting site, and then the whole nesting process took about 45 minutes, which I observed.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then once it had left the area and was moving back to the water, that's when I moved in to protect the nest. And part of the Citizen Science Project is that you download an app called TurtleSat, and then you put a little geotag where that turtle nest is so that the researchers have that information. But we also record our sightings of turtles that aren't nesting, so just if they're on the move. Also, you know, if we find a dead turtle or a predated nest,
yes,
we record all of that through the app.
And where, this recent sighting that you're talking about, where was that?
So I'm one, I think Anthony has set up, I'm not sure exactly how many councils have been involved, but I'm with the Bayswater group. And we've got a fantastic group of people at Environment House and they've set up to coordinate it. So there are 14 trackers registered in our group and our group covers Gobber Lake, the Eric Singleton Bird Sanctuary and the Maylands Lake.
Fantastic. And Anthony, you're drawing on the information by these citizen scientists to help with conservation, and is this feeding into your PhD as well? Has it, I should say?
Yeah. This citizen science started with the City of Coburn and WA Wildlife at Bibra Lake, which was one of my PhD sites. So
right.
We kind of, the first year I was out there, it was where I was finding lots of dead turtles and dug up nests, and that's where I was kind of like, we need to do something about this. So
yeah.
Went to the council, and we came up with getting the community involved because community seems to love turtles, and it's quite an easy citizen science project, and just gets community out there, and they get a lot of community kind of projects. It's planting trees and stuff. They don't really interact with animals, so this is quite a unique one. That kind of built over 3 years. We've perfected it, and that was now my new project after the PhD, is spreading the turtle trackers, as that's what we've called it, to as many councils as we can. So like Deb said, we've got, I think, 12 involved this year. We're hoping to build it over the years and kind of expand throughout the range. Because I'm just one person.
Yeah, are you looking for more citizen scientists to get on board?
We want as many as we can, because there's only so much kind of I can do. But if we get people everywhere at all different lakes and they're all telling us when they're seeing turtles, where they're seeing them, their nest sites, stuff
absolutely.
Like that, it all just feeds into that management, because it can, and dead turtles as well, so it can tell us like where, say, roads are an issue, or
yes.
where foxes or ravens might be, and then you can do stuff about it.
Paint a picture of what's actually going on.
Yeah, so if there's hot spots, you can build a tunnel under a road, or you can do fox management. It's quite vital research, having everyone out there protecting the females and then their nests, because females dying is quite a big issue for turtles, because they live for decades and they nest almost every year. So
I was going to say, I think they're quite long-lived, aren't they?
Yeah.
Snake-necked turtle. Well, unless there's a raven or a road clearing, it's quite short.
Yeah, so this species, we're not 100% sure, but like most turtles, it would probably be 50 or so, but that's also...
Is that right?
Yeah.
50 years, wow.
Possibly more.
Wow.
But yeah, that's...
And how large are they?
So they range. Females are generally bigger than males. The biggest one I've ever caught, which was just recently, it was a... So its shell length was 30 centimetres. And so they're...
Wow.
Yeah, their necks are necks and heads are about 90% of that. So all up over half a meter long. So
Okay. So they are getting right up there. Well, look, it's fantastic work that you're doing, and we really appreciate you coming in today. If people would like to get on board, what's the best way to get involved?
So we're called the project's called Saving Our Snake-Neck Turtle. So we do have an email at sosnt@murdoch.edu.au, or just contact your local council. There's a good chance they're involved, and if they're not, it just puts a bit of pressure on them, and hopefully they sign up for the next year, and we just build it from there.
Well, thank you for the work you're both doing. It's brilliant.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks so much, guys, for coming on. It's, you know, it's really interesting that all these citizen science projects just help people understand more about where they live. And the complexities of ecological systems. So it's great to see projects like this that can help us save species before they become extinct, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Deborah Bowie and turtle tracker Anthony Santoro. Deborah is one of the citizen scientists working on this project, and Anthony has just finished his PhD. Thank you so much to the both of you for coming in.
Thanks, Alex and Sabrina.
There you go, Sab. Amazing work that some people are doing out there. It's just brilliant, isn't it?
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah,
fantastic.
Indeed. And they are big. I didn't realise they got so big.
They're quite a big turtle.
Yeah. It's 11 minutes to 10. Let's get back into some of the calls, shall we, here on Roots and Shoots. The number, if you'd like to get in touch, although I do have a pretty full board, the number is 1300 222 720. The text line 0437 922 720. Let's head to Dennis. He's in Cunderdon there. Dennis, you're trying to remove a Chinese jojoba. Am I pronouncing that right, Sab?
Yes, indeed, because the J is a
Dennis, Dennis, are you there, or have we lost you?
Oh, there's
no,
a...
I'm still
you're there.
Oh, you sound like there's like poker machines or something in the background, are you? what's going on with your Chinese jojoba?
Sabrina, Alex, I brought this Chinese date a few years ago. It's paired wonderfully with fruit, etc. But I just noticed the last couple of years it's started to sucker quite badly.
Oh, yeah. They sucker terribly. Now, that was one of the concerns about when the first jojoba plantations went in. They can become a pest very quickly.
Now, what I planned to do was, with your advice, I was going to knock them on the head and just cut it off at about ground level, and maybe paint the stump with some glyphosate or blackberry killer or something, just to try and chill it. Hopefully the suckers will go with it.
Yep.
But I mean, it's a bit of a shame. It does bear lovely fruit, and and every year it's the same. It just goes berserk. But the suckers worry me.
Rightly so. and that was one of the big concerns about, number one, the fruit being eaten by birds and spreading the seed everywhere, but they have a tendency to sucker something dreadfully. So the trick with it is, Dennis, is that you need to paint it as soon with the blackberry tree killer, as soon as you cut it down.
Yep.
So...
I'm on the header, so I'm sort of, I've got in mind elsewhere, but I'm trying to listen as well. So.
Yeah, that's cool.
You're on the header. Ah, that's what it is. It's not a poker machine.
No.
Nowhere near as much fun.
It's got plenty of bright lights.
and you're in farming, so that actually is a gamble, isn't it, Dennis?
It is.
All right.
So I honestly, I'd get rid of them, particularly where you are. You do not want Chinese jojoba going through the entire farming district. They're not going to love you for that.
No. All right. Shall I mix anything with this blackberry sugar?
Yep, kerosene, kero, Dennis. Yeah, 60% kero, 40% blackberry and tree killer.
That'll kill it.
That it's not going to come back after that, I can tell you, Dennis.
Well, good luck with the harvest there in Cunderdin, Dennis, and good luck with the jojoba as well. Let's go to Karen. She's in Kalamunda. Morning, Karen.
Oh, good morning. I've just got a query about my kangaroo paws, Sabrina.
Yeah.
They're a beautiful display, a metre high.
Mm-hmm.
The red kangaroo paws. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I've had them for about 8-9 years, and they've just about gone off really quickly because you know that big hot spell we had, and then it rained.
Yeah.
So, how far can I cut them down? Will they flower again this summer?
Oh yes, yes, yes. You'll get more flowering now.
Okay,
the flowering stem you've got to cut down at ground level. All right.
Really, really. That's severe. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Now, it's too late in the season to give your paws a proper haircut, which is where you cut the entire bush down to 10 centimetres.
Oh, do you do the whole bush, do you? Not just the stem?
Whole bush, but you don't do that. Don't do that until autumn, Karen.
Just do the stems.
Just do the stems for now, yep.
Okay,
but you will get another flowering, yep.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Sabrina.
My pleasure.
Another happy customer there. Thank you, Karen. I've been neglecting the text line, so let's get through a few texts here. My kids go to Basie Primary. We have just adopted the long-necked turtle as our school mascot. There you go.
Wow. How cool is that?
That is brilliant. Fantastic. And some great work being done there to help their survival. Just trying to... When Margie's texted in, Sabrina, can I move a native frangipani? Hasn't had water for 15 years.
Oh, God. I'm surprised it's still alive. They send a massively deep, deep taproot. If it's 15 years old, I don't like your chances of it being transplanted.
There you go.
You can try, but it's 15 probably years going to die.
Yeah, it hasn't had a bit of TLC in that in a long time. Mm. Hi, Sabrina. I have finally got a sunshine special passion fruit vine.
Yes.
Any tips for planting? I'm in the southwest. That's from Jay.
Okay, Jay, you need to get a big bundle of compost, some chicken manure. You're going to put all that in the bottom of the planting hole. If you have a butcher in town, go and get a liver from a large beast, like a steer or something that's dead, clearly, and you put that in the bottom of the hole. Some people put the liver and a loaf of bread. Because you want your passion fruit to take off really quickly. It's live fast, die young. You've only got 5 to 6 years. And it'll fairly take off like a shot.
Off. There you go. Back on the copper information that we were discussing earlier. Hi, gardening team. To prevent mosquitoes from breeding in water dishes in your garden or elsewhere, put a piece of copper in the container. They will never breed. Oh. According to this correspondent.
Well, I never.
There you go.
Hi, Sal. I'm going to try that.
Any thoughts on why our ornamental grapevines have dark purple leaves and no fresh new growth growing in half wine barrels in Busso? That from Rich there.
That is something to do with the pH of the soil that it's growing in. I'd say there's a nutrient deficiency there.
Okay, let's head to Doubleview. Bill is there, but he's moving to Mandurah. What are you hoping to move to Mandurah, Bill?
I'm hoping to move two trees. First one was a silver princess, a eucalyptus caesia,
yeah.
I think.
How big is it?
Well, it grew to about 6 feet, and then some nasty little person broke it off at the base. And it's now regrowing. It's probably about... 2 feet high.
No, you're not going to be able
to. Leaves.
No. You won't be able to transplant that. It'll die as soon as you dig it up. Sorry, Bill.
It's the only way to do it. The other one was Eucalyptus macrocarpa.
Oh, yeah.
I've got two different versions of them.
Yes.
They're absolute monsters. They probably are about 12 feet high.
Nope. Again, no. Nope, and no, no, and no.
Can I cut a bit off and start a new one?
Oh, they don't really grow very well from cuttings. You can try it, but you'd need the tip growth not further down in the hardwood. I think you're just going to have to be taking a trip to a nursery and buying two new trees, actually, Bill.
Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, you can play Spacey Jane again anytime you like.
Oh, there you go. Oh, thank you, Bill.
You've done well today with your picks, Sab. Thank you, Bill.
I have.
Barry's in Girraween. He'll be our last caller for the day. So we've got a short bit of time there, Barry, if you can make it quick.
Yeah, no worries. G'day, Sabrina.
G'day, Barry.
I've planted mandarin seeds. Is that too early to do it?
No, not at all, Barry. Perfect timing. Perfect.
Oh, beautiful. Right, yeah. And feed it plenty of manure?
Yep, lots of manure. Lots of, put in a bit of your Ingirraween, put in a bit of clay, a bit of compost, and she'll take off.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ingirraween, we don't have clay. We have sand.
Yeah, I know. That's why you need clay, Barry. You need clay and you need compost.
Okay, no worries. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Barry.
There we go, Barry in Girraween. So not too early to plant mandarin seeds, as long as you do the right prep, hey, Sat?
Yep, it's all about prep.
Now, you're in the gold fields. Today?
Yes, today and tomorrow. So 10:30, come and have a chat with me. I'll be at the nursery and... I love to get to know people up here again.
Absolutely. And it's been great to reconnect on Saturday breakfast. If we'd thrown in James Lush, it'd be like it was 2008 again, Sal.
I know.
Like old times.
Just like the olden days.
Indeed. Hey, great to chat. And thank you once again for being such a brilliant font of information. And enjoy your time in the goldfields.
Lovely to play with you again, Alex.
That's the brilliant Sabrina Hahn coming to us from the Kalgoorlie studios today. I'm Alex Simon. Hey, thanks so much for your company this morning. It's coming up to news time.
This is an ABC podcast.